Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's going to take the next few minutes to share some great words of hope, insight, humor, and relevance. In today's lost and searching world, that's something everyone desperately needs to hear. Speaking of that, we'd love to keep this conversation going with you anytime through our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, there's so many ways to connect with us from there that you really need to check it out for yourself, richardellistalks.com. But right now, let's go ahead and get things off and running with today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Remember the Titan. And it's not Remember the Titans. You may remember that movie came out a while back, Denzel Washington, based on a true story about a high school in Alexandria, Virginia, 1971, where the school got integrated and Denzel's character had to come in and be the coach. And it was black players and white players and just a tremendous challenge. There was hatred, bigotry, prejudice, and things didn't work out up front so well. But even back in 71, this coach and this assistant coach, a white man, ended up bringing this team together and turning it into a team, no matter what color it was. It took some breaking, but it worked, and is a powerful story if you ever get a chance to see that. But we're not talking about that. Turn to Matthew chapter 14. We're going to jump down into the bulk of this. If you read 14 sometime, you'll know that the first part of chapter 14, John the Baptist is beheaded because some girl dances before Herod, and he makes a promise to her that he'll give her anything up to half the kingdom. So her mom says, well, ask for John the Baptist's head, because John the Baptist had challenged their family in regards to a situation, a relationship, somebody sleeping with somebody that shouldn't have been. So bottom line, at this party, John the Baptist gets executed, and I do want to point this out. In verse 10, so he sent and had John beheaded in prison, and his head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, and she brought it to her mother. Then his disciples, John's disciples, came and took away the body and buried it and went and told Jesus. And then in verse 13, when Jesus heard about John the Baptist, he departed from there by boat to a deserted place by himself. And you think, well, he's God. This stuff doesn't affect him. John the Baptist was his cousin, basically. And he knew John. He had grown up with John. John was the one that God had selected to say, prepare the way. You know, this guy's coming behind me, one who's, I'm not even worthy to latch the shoes of his feet. And so when John the Baptist dies, I don't think that it's a shock to Jesus. He knew everything. But just the reality of John being dead and how he died, Jesus gets in a boat and goes off to a place by himself. And in a minute, you'll see in this same chapter where the boat thing comes up. Verse 22, let's jump in there. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side. And while he sent the multitudes away, and when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there, but the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now again, Jesus knows everything that's going to happen. And I think there are times in our own lives, in my life, where you think, well, you know, Jesus is gone. And literally here, he was gone. He deliberately, it looks like, had sent the disciples out into this boat by themselves into a storm. And there had been instances before where he had been in the boat and there had been a storm, and they were able to wake him up and say, do something. Don't you know we're drowning? But here he puts them out in the boat by themselves as though they had no power, which they didn't by themselves without him. He sends them out. They get out in the middle of the storm, and he goes away to pray somewhere and waits till they're in the middle of this fix. So while they're out there and he's up there praying, he gets done praying. It says, now when evening came, he was alone there, but the boat was now out in the middle of the sea, tossed in the waves, and the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. Now let me encourage you to do something. If you're reading the Bible, don't just read over this stuff. This is nuts. I mean, you walk around, you get into the boat, but what goes through Jesus' mind where he literally thinks, okay, they're out in the water. I don't want to bother with another boat. It's too late for that. I'll just walk off the side of this mountain. I mean, think of the power it takes, the confidence it takes to be able to walk on dry land all the way up to the edge of the water and then just keep walking. I mean, you got to have something going on to do that. And you say, well, it's in there, but that didn't really happen, did it? It either did or it didn't. And this is where people get in trouble reading the Bible. They say, well, the Bible's full of all this stuff. If you say you read the Bible, you believe he left dry land and took off walking across this sea toward this boat. So he goes across the fourth watch of the night, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It's a ghost." Well, what else could it be? Nobody can walk on water. He's out in the middle of this lake. It's a ghost. And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid." Now, before we get to 28 and what happens with Peter here in this account, let me ask you a question. What is it that you want to do, or you believe that God wants you to do, that you're just too afraid to take the step and implement, but you know for a fact there is something, there's a challenge, but you're this close, you're up to the edge, and God's challenging you to move, or something you know you should do? It could be losing weight, it could be quitting smoking or drinking or whatever it is you're doing you think you're not supposed to be, or working out, maybe beginning to exercise, and you're close to doing it, you just can't pull the trigger, you just can't take that next step. Jesus walking on the water, they're afraid it's a ghost. He speaks to them, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." But even his voice is not enough for Peter. And Peter comes back and answers him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Now, Peter, of all these guys in this group of disciples, is the wild card. And I don't know if this is a challenge, if he's just got a bunch of faith all stirred up, or just, you know, who knows what Peter's thinking. But he gives Jesus a challenge. He said, "If it's you, then tell me to come to you on the water. If you could walk on the water, so can I. Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, Jesus says one word, "Come." All right? Come. Get out here. Now, I don't think it's any big deal. Jesus made the whole planet, spoke words, things came into existence. For Jesus to walk out on water, you think, well, it's just not possible. The whole thing's not possible. But for Peter, in his finite mind, in his human mind, he is about to cross a line mentally, psychologically, physiologically. It's not going to happen unless God intervenes here. And he steps out of a boat and hits water and stands. So Jesus says, "Come," and when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." Now, he was fine as long as what? He obeyed what Jesus said to do. He kept his eyes on Jesus, what Jesus could do, not what was going on around him. And see, our circumstances sometimes are what kills us. You say, "Yeah, I could do whatever he's telling me to do, but what about all this stuff? This could happen, that could happen." And we take our eyes off of the power of God and focus in on him and start thinking about all the distractions, all these things that could create a problem. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Ask him what you're supposed to do and stick to that no matter what. So he starts to sink and cries out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Now, is Jesus busting his chops? No. Is he hard on us? He challenges us, yes. But in this case, Peter's the one saying, "Okay, if you're who you say you are, I'm going to try this and see what happens." And we get out there and it works for a little bit. And then we start to sink and we go, "Oh God, help me." And he reaches down. He's right there and grabs us and helps us. What he says to Peter, he says to us, "Oh, you have little faith. Why'd you doubt? You were doing it. You were making it." And there are some of us here, some beyond here today, who there's stuff in your life, you've been making it. Your life has changed and you've been walking along and it's impossible to live the life that you're living now. And then you get distracted by the storm, by the surroundings, by the boisterous sea, the life around you. And you say, "I can't make it. I'm sinking. I'm not going to make it." And you cry out. And what does he say? The same thing to us. "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got in the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Not just because he walked on water, but because he had given Peter the power to walk on water as well. Now you say, "Well, when are you ever going to use walking on water? You know, even if I could, when am I going to do that?" And you know what my thought is? Even if I could, if I did that, it would throw people so much for a loop. It'd be distracting, you'd think. So it's not about me walking on water necessarily. That was the situation. That was Peter. That was Jesus. That was what happened right there. But I don't have to walk on water. I got stuff. You got stuff. It isn't walking on water. It's just as impossible though. Now, what is this thing that he's telling you to do? And if you stepped up to the edge of the water and you said, "Jesus, if this is really what you want me to do, then ask me to come to you and show me that I can do this in your power." Go to Mark chapter 9. Let's jump in here at verse 14. And when he came to the disciples, he saw a great multitude around them and scribes disputing with them. And immediately when they saw him, all the people were greatly amazed and running to him, greeted him. And he asked the scribes, he didn't ask the disciples, he said, ask the scribes, what are you discussing with them? Then one of the crowd answered and said, a man in the crowd comes up to Jesus and said, teacher, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. And wherever it seizes him, it throws him down. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast it out, but they could not. You ever been in that situation? Every once in a while I get in a situation, I'm like, man, where is Jesus when you need him? He answered him and said, verse 19, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me. In other words, what's it going to take? They should have been able to handle that situation. Then they brought him to him, and when he saw him, immediately the spirit convulsed him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. So he asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? You know what? Don't ask questions. Fix the kid. There's a kid laying on the ground. He's foaming at the mouth. And Jesus says, well, how long has he had this problem? You know, don't ask questions. You know the answer is just do something. He starts this conversation. This stuff's just perplexing to me, but it's here. How long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood, since he was a little kid. Often he has thrown him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. And then look at this phrase, and this is about as real as you can get. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. If you can help us, please help us. I brought him to you. Your disciples took a shot at it. Maybe this is too hard. If you can help us, have mercy on us and help us. Jesus said to him, now look at this phrase in 23, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. What could be going on in the world today if I just had some faith to ask God to do something in my life? Forget my life, somebody else's life. Look at verse 24. Immediately the father of the child cried out and said with tears, and I love the real, he cries out, he's screaming, cries out with tears, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. I believe, but you're going to have to help me. I'm out on the water, but I'm sinking. I'm a human being. I'm trying. I'm doing the best I can, but I can't do it. It isn't about the courage just to come ask you to heal my son. It's about faith that you can do something, and you're telling me if I believe anything's possible. Well, I believe, but you're going to have to help my unbelief. Have you prayed that recently? When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, deaf and dumb spirit, I command you, come out of him and enter him no more. Then the spirit cried out, convulsed him greatly, and came out of him, and he became as one dead, so that many said, he's dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And if you keep reading, the disciples came, and you may not even have this. Some translations of the Bible exclude this. But the disciples came later and said, what happened? Why couldn't we do it? And he said to them, these don't come out except by prayer and fasting. And you know what? I believe that was the problem. Personally, I believe that's what happened. Jesus had paid the price in prayer. We've already read in another passage. He went up, sent the disciples ahead and went up to pray. He's praying. If you think being in the situation and prayer is going to fix it, you got to be praying before you get in the battle. You got to prepare before the battle, not just start swinging your sword in the battle. Prayer is the battle, and you fight that before you even get to the situation. I had an experience recently. I don't know if you drive, if you're from this area of Dallas, Fort Worth, if you drive between Dallas and Fort Worth on I-30, between Dallas and Fort Worth is an amusement park called Six Flags. And in a back corner of Six Flags is a ride called the Titan. And I remember when the thing went up, and I don't go to Six Flags a lot, but I remember watching that thing, and I drive by and look over there, and I love rides, and I love doing all this crazy stuff, but I kept looking at this ominous ride 245 feet out of the ground. And when you get to the top of this hill, supposedly, it drops 255 feet and goes through a 120-foot tunnel underground and comes back up. When you come off that hill, it picks up and hits a speed of 85 miles an hour. And I'm driving 30, looking over at the Titan, looking at the Titan. Well, the other day, it worked out where a whole family and some other people went to Six Flags together. So we get to the park, and my girls inform me that Mama has said she's riding the Titan. Mama said she's riding the Titan. So now my heart's beating, you know, okay, I was thinking about it. You know, I'm getting a little old to be riding the Titan. But now Mama's riding the Titan. How am I going to get out of this? So we get to the park, we start riding the rides, and you know, this feeling of sooner or later we're going to come around and we're making our way to the Titan. You know, that's the destination. Now, before I get to the Titan, let me tell you something else that happened that day. Little Catherine wanted to ride the swings. You know what the swings are? You get in the swings, they put the little thing, and it starts going, and you know, you go around and around. It's simple, swings. Well, we're in line to get in the swings, and they stopped the line, and over at the emergency exit part of the ride, there were a couple of little girls in wheelchairs, and a couple that was with them, and they opened the little gate, and they brought this little girl in a wheelchair, and they put her in a swing and told everybody they couldn't be in the one in front of her or behind her. And this little girl had been severely burned from head to toe, had bandages around her arms. Her face had been burned. She had her head wrapped. She was missing her fingers. She was a mess. But in the midst of all that mess, there was a mouthful of teeth and a smile. And she was getting on the swings. And I've got my little girls all in one piece. This little girl getting on this ride. And I'm thinking, you know what? She could be in a hospital somewhere dying. And somebody said, let's go to Six Flags. And there she was in the park, in the swings. Her little buddy was a little bit afraid, but here she was out there in the swings. Something in these little girls said, you know what? We may be in trouble, but we're not dead. And we're going to cross some lines. We're going to keep living. And they had people staring at them, pointing at them. And I tried to go up to these little girls and as much as I could possibly do, look them straight in the eyes and engage them and talk to them and say, man, you ought to ride this ride and treat them like normal people because that's what they are. They had just been affected on the outside. I had an opportunity to gather that group and specifically my little girls and I stopped them and I said, you know what? We're not taking this for granted. Look at what you've got. Look at what God's given you. And these little girls are courageously out here moving on, doing the best they can with what they've got. And my thought is, what's my excuse? We rode a few more rides, and then we finally went down this long walkway to the Titan. And I'm realizing Rebecca is not kidding. She is going to ride this ride. And I used to didn't have this kind of fear, but you know what? It's a big ride, and it's a fast ride. And the lines were short, so I didn't even have time to pray through the line. It was just, we were there. So we go through this line, we get up the stairs, and boom, there's all these lines. And the front car, you know, it's a little longer because the crazy people that want to get in the really front car have to wait a little longer to do that. And I'm telling you, physiologically, I'm getting a little freaked by it. I'm saying I'm joking around, but it's a weird feeling to get up in that terminal of a roller coaster and know what's about to happen to you if you're crazy enough to do what you're about to do. So I get in line. Rebecca's with me. We're talking. Everybody else is fine. The girls are saying, no, absolutely not. You know, they're not going to get on. So I pull up, and there's a deal where when you get the little thing opens, you can step through the car and go put your hat on the other side or your glasses or your pacemaker because everything's coming off if you don't have it strapped down. So I realize once I get up the front of the line, I could step through that car and go over and put my hat up and just keep moving like, well, God bless you guys. So I put my hat over there and my little heart's, you know, beating like a little kid and I come back and I sit in and there's a moment when you take the lap harness and you clip it down and then you go to pull it back up, and it's not moving anymore, and you're pretty much in that chair unless you stop the whole ride and say, let me off of this ride, you know, which happens every once in a while. So once I clamp that thing down in my lap, and everybody's in, I got split seconds to bail or not, and I realize I'm in. And then you hear that release feeling, and the thing starts, you know, going down that little hill and starts to come around, and I was in. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't get out. I can't breathe now talking about it. I look back and I said, what are we doing on this ride? And on every roller coaster you've been on, you know, you go down, it starts this little thing and then it makes that turn and then it comes around and it hits that hill and there's this clicking, you know, it starts that clicking sound and you know you're dead. It's like, you know, you can't get off anymore. And what's worse is it's not a fast clicking sound. It's this hill, like climbing a hill to a 24-story building. That's how high this ride is. But all of a sudden, I realize I have made a decision. I've crossed the line, and I'm going up this hill praying and like, God, you know, what do you hold on to, and whose hair am I going to grab, and, you know, what am I going to do? So we climb this hill. We get to the top of this hill, And it's, you know, it's like an eternity, because you know you get to the top of the hill and this big old 3-car roller coaster, all that momentum is going to come over. It's not going to get stuck on the top of the hill. And it starts to push over and you look down, and I'm telling you, it is almost a vertical drop. 255 feet, you're about to drop out of the sky in this roller coaster. And I can't get out. So I hold on. I'm like, okay, Lord, here we go. And all of a sudden, the exhilaration of that thrust and 85 miles an hour, that thing takes off like a rocket, goes through that 120-foot tunnel, comes out the other side, up on top of a hill, slows down a little bit, and then takes off again, does 4.5 Gs in these helix turns. I mean, you try to raise your hand, and you're like, oh, you know, you're going to fall. You know, it blows you out of the deal. You can't do it. You're fighting the G-forces. But here's what happened to me. I got to the top of the hill, cleared that drop, came up around the hill, and all of a sudden this exhilaration hit me. I was alive. I'd survived the Titan. It wasn't over yet, but that had to have been the worst part. I had conquered some kind of fear, and something went off in me the other day, and I thought, you know, I got to remember the Titan. I can't forget this. Because there are challenges in my life. You say, well, that's not like walking on water. That's not your kid being healed. But you know what? It is similar. We get up to certain points and the fears kick in and you say, God, I can't do this. And he says, trust me, I'm going to take care of you. Other people have climbed this hill and survived this ride. You're going to be okay. And I'm not just watching you. I am with you. I am in you. So I clear the Titan. Now I'm an evangelist. Now I'm going looking for my girls. We're going to ride the Titan. That's what we're going to do. Go right back through the line, get back on again, and I'm ready now because I've survived it. I want on. So I'm talking. I'm not getting Catherine to do it. She's only 6. So I got Elizabeth and Victoria, and Elizabeth ain't doing it for nothing. I offered her $100, I think, towards something, and she would not even cash money. But Victoria, I start selling Victoria, and she loves this kind of stuff. And here's what happened to my little Victoria. I start talking to her and I said, Victoria, I said, trust me. I said, I'm your daddy and I know what you enjoy and this is not too much for you. Trust me. And she went on that. She got in line with me. She got up in that car just like I did, kept looking around. She didn't even have a hat to put up, but she was trying to find one. She sits down next to me, clamps that thing down, and huge crocodile tears start coming down her cheeks. And I'm saying, Victoria, you can't get off. We're stuck. No, I said, you know, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. But see, I know my daughter well enough to know. I know Elizabeth wouldn't have made it because that's just where she is and who she is as a person. But Victoria could do this and she would regret not doing it. Same thing happened to her. She's holding on to me and everything she can find. These tears coming. We're going up the hill. Her eyes are huge. We get to the top of the hill. We drop out of the sky, 85 miles an hour, go blowing through that tunnel, come up on the other side. And she's got this smile on her face. I put high five up. She smacks it. And you know what? She's fine. Now she's an evangelist. Selling Elizabeth. You got to ride the Titan.
We'll get back to Richard in a moment to close out today's talk. But first, I want to share something about our program. Our mission is actually very simple, to take the planet. So it's our prayer that these daily talks from Richard aren't something you only hear and enjoy, but that they inspire you to share with others. Together, we can do this. The message of the gospel is something everyone needs to hear, and that's why it's such a priority to us. So join us in this important mission. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD to say you're in. Or you can get on board with us through our website, richardellistalks.com. Well, here's Richard with some closing thoughts for us.
God will never challenge you to do something without going with you to do it. You say, well, you're talking about a roller coaster. You know what? Our lives are roller coasters. We're up and down and up and down, and we get to these places, and God says, okay, are we going to do this or not? You can't keep getting in line and stepping through the car and going out the exit and doing that the rest of your life. Trust me. And there is nothing like doing what God's challenging you to do, doing the right thing, accepting the challenge, and surviving the ride, so to speak, and going, this works. God, help me do it. It wasn't my courage. It was my faith in him and what was impossible without him, because he gave me the faith to believe. Then I crossed the line, and I've seen God do something in my life. And then if you say to someone else and they see your life, they say, you know what? If he can do it, I can do it. Sometimes you say, well, it's no big deal. If I don't cross that line, if I don't trust God, if I don't do what I'm supposed to do, you know what? God's still going to love me. There's no consequence. You know what? Part of the consequence is when we don't believe, someone behind us doesn't believe either. It is important for us to cross these lines and grow up and trust God and take the challenge, whatever it may be, and not just have the courage of our convictions, but to say, Lord Jesus, I can't do this without you. And when it happens, you're going to get all the glory because it's impossible. In Philippians 2:13, Paul writes the simple phrase, for it is God who works in you both to will and to do for his good pleasure.
You've been listening to Richard Ellis Talks. We really appreciate that you've spent this time with us, but we want to keep the conversation going with you. A couple of ways you can connect with us is by giving us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD. That's 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is through our website, richardellistalks.com. You can email us, sign up to get the daily talk sent to your phone each day, right on the prayer wall where we can pray for you, or even stay in touch through our Facebook page at Talk with Richard. We love bringing you the program every day, but it means even more to us when you let us know how the program has helped you. So call 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. Finally, if you enjoy the program, let us know by your generous support. It would really mean a lot to us. richardellistalks.com. So until next time, have a great day, and thank you for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.